Welcome to Cut and Thrust, your podcast for the bloody and sometimes bizarre journey through the Middle Ages. Whether it's dark battles, questionable hygiene, or hair-raising rulers, here you'll get history as it really was, raw and unfiltered. So grab your sword, put on your helmet, and let's dive into the wild world of the past.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Battle Merchant Podcast. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. Today we are talking about a topic that, well, that really fascinates anyone interested in the Middle Ages.
The sword. But not as a weapon, as a symbol, as the embodiment of an entire way of life.
What always surprises me, in the late Middle Ages, around the 14th and 15th centuries, the sword wasn't really that decisive militarily anymore. Other weapons had long since surpassed it.
And yet it retained this incredible symbolic significance. That's quite a fascinating paradox.
The Swiss pikemen, for example, held off entire armies of knights with pole weapons, pikes, halberds, 3-4 meters long in tight formation. A single knight with his sword simply couldn't compete against that.
And crossbows could pose a real threat to armor, especially at close range, with powerful bows and when hitting weak spots. At distance, it was by no means a sure thing. The sword, that was for close combat, when the lines had already been broken. A secondary weapon, if you will.
But still, when you think of a knight today, what do you see?
The sword, always the sword.
Not the pike, not the crossbow.
Exactly, even though those were more important militarily. That shows how powerful the symbolism is.
We experience this in reenactment too. A helmet makes you a soldier. A shield makes you a fighter. But a sword, that makes you a knight. In the eyes of the spectators at least.
It's kind of like, how should I put it, like military officers today. They still wear sabers with their dress uniforms. And those haven't been actual weapons for a long time.
Right. The ceremonial saber.
In many armies today, the ceremonial saber is primarily understood as a symbol, no longer as a weapon. It represents honor, duty, camaraderie, the ideal of the officer.
So the same development as in the late Middle Ages. The practical use disappears, but the symbolic meaning remains, or even grows stronger.
That's what happened with the sword too. It became a carrier of meaning. Chivalry, honor, courage, masculinity, all embodied in a single object.
What's interesting in reenactment is...
Hold on, I need to jump in here. Because the sword had another distinctive quality.
Which was?
It was purely a weapon for killing people. A spear could be used for hunting, a bow as well, an axe as a tool, but a sword... It was primarily made to kill people. It was hardly useful as a tool.
Oh, that changes the perspective.
Anyone who could afford a sword, and they were expensive, was clearly signaling, I'm ready to kill. Don't mess with me.
So it was a statement, not just to allies, but also to potential enemies.
Absolutely. Wearing a sword was making a declaration.
And that brings us to a story, doesn't it? You mentioned something about swords as an insult?
The swords of violence and pride. One of the most dramatic episodes surrounding the symbolism of swords.
I know that one. Before the Battle of Tannenberg.
1410, exactly. The Grand Master of the Teutonic Order, Ulrich von Jungingen, sends 2 swords to his enemies. To the King of Poland and the Grand Duke of Lithuania.
So it was meant as a provocation?
As an insult. The heralds delivered provocative messages. And that had consequences. Deadly consequences.
That's so medieval and yet so modern at the same time. Symbolic politics at the highest level.
And these 2 swords were later kept as important state trophies in the crown treasury. The actual coronation sword was the Scherbiez, but the Grunwald swords were presented at ceremonial occasions as a symbol of victory over the order.
The power of symbols. A piece of metal becomes a historical monument.
That's the heart of today's topic. The sword as more than just a weapon. As a carrier of history, honor, and sometimes of deadly pride. The story I want to tell now is so dramatic that you'd hardly believe it if it weren't historically documented.
The Swords of Violence and Pride.
Exactly. July 1410. The Teutonic Order under Grand Master Ulrich von Jungingen faces a united Polish-Lithuanian army. And things aren't looking good for the order. The opposing side has significantly more fighters. The exact numbers are disputed, but estimates suggest perhaps 20,000 knights and mercenaries of the order against a considerably larger Polish-Lithuanian force.
And then the Grand Master does something unusual.
He sends out two heralds with two bare swords. They are to be delivered to the Polish King Władysław and the Lithuanian Grand Duke Vytautas.
A formal challenge?
Yes, but with a message. The heralds delivered a challenge. They said the Grand Master was sending these swords to draw the enemies out of their hiding place. And those words packed quite a punch.
And what did they say?
The heralds declared, according to the chronicler Dugosz, in arrogant pride, that their Grand Master was sending these swords as aid for the battle, because the Polish army apparently lacked the courage to face combat.
That's an incredible provocation.
And it certainly was. Because, don't get me wrong, formal battle challenges through heralds were common back then. But sending swords along? That was an extraordinary provocative gesture. And the tone of that message
was condescending.
Haughty. Arrogant, especially since the order was in the weaker position. The allies had more troops and tactically more time. And then to send these swords with this provocative message, that was a statement.
So the swords really became a diplomatic weapon here, didn't they? Not for fighting, but for provoking.
And that backfired spectacularly. The Battle of Tannenberg, or Grunwald as it's called in Poland, ended in a devastating defeat for the Teutonic Order. Grandmaster Ulrich von Jungingen himself fell on the battlefield. Large parts of the Order's leadership were killed or captured.
And the swords?
They were captured, taken to Krakow. And this is where it gets really interesting for anyone fascinated by symbolism.
They were then used at...
Kept in the Polish crown treasury. For centuries. As trophies, not as coronation regalia, the Poles had the Sherbiets for that. But as a lasting reminder of this victory.
For centuries? That's an incredible transformation from an arrogant provocation to a royal symbol.
The irony is perfect. The swords that were meant to embody the order's pride became a lasting symbol of its defeat.
This shows again how multifaceted the symbolism of swords can be. One and the same object can carry completely different meanings, depending on who owns it and what story is attached to it.
And that's what's so fascinating about historical artifacts. They tell stories. The originals, by the way, are now considered lost. Since the mid-19th century, to be precise.
Really? Given their significance?
Yes, after the partitions of Poland, they were still with the Czartoryski family, until 1853, when the Russian gendarmerie confiscated them as illegal weapons, lost ever since. There are replicas in the Wawel Armory in Krakow, but the originals? No one has seen those for a long time.
That's tragic and fitting at the same time. The physical objects are gone, but the story they tell lives on.
That's what makes stories like these so valuable. Speaking of which, if you enjoy these kinds of insights, please leave a like and subscribe to the channel. It really helps us produce more of these historical deep dives.
What also strikes me about this story, the Grand Master knew he was outnumbered. Why this provocation?
Time pressure. The Order had been expecting mercenaries who arrived too late. He needed a quick decision. And perhaps he hoped to provoke his enemies into rash action through the insult.
The opposite happened.
Yes, the Polish-Lithuanian side kept their composure, accepted the swords, had them blessed on the altar during Mass, and then executed their strategy.
So their restraint in the face of the insult was part of the victory.
You could see it that way. The story certainly shows that symbolism is a double-edged sword, in the truest sense of the word. What was intended as a show of power became an eternal reminder of one's own defeat.
And the sword as a symbol works in both directions. It can show strength or pride that gets punished. What always fascinates me about swords is this practical aspect. Think about it. A lance might be 3-4 meters long. A battle axe is bulky and heavy. But a sword?
You could carry it all day long.
In a scabbard at your belt, relatively inconspicuous. You could walk through the city with it, appear at court, travel. Try doing that with a pike.
And that's an aspect that's often overlooked. The sword wasn't just meant for battle. It had this threefold function, right?
Battle weapon, means of self-defense while traveling, and, not to be underestimated, status symbol. You could display it without using it.
Although simply wearing one was already making a statement.
And what a statement. Because, and this is the crucial point, a sword was expensive. Really expensive. The exact prices varied by quality and region, of course, but we're talking about sums that a simple peasant or craftsman couldn't just come up with.
A good noble sword in the 13th century, we're talking about maybe 8% of a year's income. A cheap peasant sword, on the other hand, could be had for about 1%. So yes, a serious investment.
And then you needed the scabbard, the belt, the maintenance. It was an investment.
But it was more than a financial decision. It was a, how should I put it, a declaration of intent.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. Feeling curious? Then head over to battlemerchant.com. They've got all sorts of medieval stuff, from costumes to armor and loads more. Totally worth a look.
In what way?
We touched on this earlier. Think again about what a sword was made for. Unlike a spear, bow, or axe, it has exactly one purpose.
To kill.
People, yes. It's essentially a pure combat weapon. Not a tool, and unlike a spear or bow, hardly an everyday hunting implement. Though there was the hunting sword from the early modern period onwards, but that's something specialized.
That reinforces this special perspective on wearing one.
Exactly. This investment was a public declaration of one's intentions. It clearly showed that you belonged to the armed elite and wouldn't hesitate when it came down to it.
It's almost like a calling card of danger. You didn't have to say anything, do anything. The sword at your side spoke for itself.
And that worked in both directions. It deterred potential attackers, but it also showed your peers that you belonged, that you were one of them.
That's interesting when you think about today, by the way. In some countries, there's this open carry of weapons. And that's not primarily about self-defense either. It's a statement.
A signal of belonging to a certain group, a certain attitude.
The psychology behind it hasn't really changed in centuries.
Although the medieval knight had different conventions, of course. The sword was part of his identity, usually worn, with exceptions, depending on the place and occasion.
And those scabbards, they weren't just functional either. For higher-ranking knights, they were elaborately decorated, with metal fittings, sometimes with gemstones. The scabbard was part of the presentation.
Like an expensive suit today. It's about the overall image.
So a sword was weapon, status symbol, and, if you will, a kind of identification, all in one object.
That's why it retained this fascination over the centuries. Even when it became militarily irrelevant, this symbolic charge remained.
Because it wasn't about the blade, but about what it stood for.
The readiness for combat. Belonging to the knightly class. The honor that came with it.
And that also explains why swords were so often passed down through generations. It wasn't just a valuable object. It was history. Family history.
A sword your grandfather carried, in your hand. That creates a connection.
It makes it more than metal and leather. A legacy.
When I think back now to everything we've discussed, the sword really was more than a weapon.
It was an idea, an embodiment of everything that defined chivalry. Honor, courage, the willingness to stand up for something.
And the fascinating thing is, this symbolism hasn't disappeared. It has transformed, but it's still there.
Look at how prevalent swords are in fantasy literature, in films, in games. There are thousands of other weapons, but the hero almost always carries a sword.
That's probably because...
because it has this direct connection. Sword against sword. Eye to eye. It's personal.
No distance like with a bow. No hiding. When you wield a sword, you face your opponent.
This also brings us full circle to why swords play such a special role in reenactment and LARP. It's not just a piece of equipment. It defines your character.
What do you mean?
In LARP, for example, you can play an archer, a mage, a warrior with an axe, but when you carry a sword, you're perceived differently. It radiates something.
That ancient symbolism we discussed.
Yes, it carries over. Even if it's a foam sword, even if it's play, the sword makes a statement.
The swords of Tannenberg are the perfect example of this. Originally intended as an insult, they became symbols of victory. The physical objects are long gone, but their story lives on.
And perhaps that's what's remarkable about the sword as a symbol. It outlives its own materiality.
Yes. The metal rusts, the leather decays. But the idea it stood for, that endures.
Honor, courage, the willingness to stand up for what you believe in. These are timeless values.
And that's why the sword still fascinates us today. It's not nostalgia, it's not just aesthetics. It's this connection to something greater.
To a time when symbols still carried weight. When an object could be more than the sum of its parts.
The sword was the ultimate symbol of chivalry. And even though warfare has long since changed, this embodiment of virtues still resonates.
To this day, in our fascination with history, in the way we tell stories, in the replicas we hold in our hands.
And with that, we've reached the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening.
If you enjoyed this topic, you'll find many more articles on historical subjects on the Battle Merchant blog. Armor, weapons, everyday life in the Middle Ages.
And of course, the right products if you want to dive into this world yourself. Whether reenactment, LARP, or simply a fascination with history.
Check us out at battlemerchant.com. And until next time.
Take care.
And so we ride towards the end of this episode. Keep your sword sharp and your mugs full. We'll catch you in the next one.